You should have recognized the shirt.
Alloway Parks Recreation and Forestry Committee meeting, Tuesday, May 28th, 2019. It is 5:32.
All right. Excuse me. I'll call the meeting to order. I'll start with a roll call. Lee Bougie.
Here.
Bob Ferguson.
Here.
Angela Kowalczyk-Adrians is here. Dan Fox.
Excused.
Dina Mooney will be a few minutes late.
Yep.
Danielle Pierke, did I say that correctly?
Pierke, yep.
Pierke,
here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Trustee Rob Atwood.
Here.
Okay. Item number two, we'll start with the election of Park Recreation and Forestry Committee Chairperson. Do we have any nominations?
This is always the meeting you want to make sure. Right? You don't want to miss this meeting.
I don't mind continuing to do it, but
ask
if
you're well and I'll
I'm willing, but if there's somebody else who wants to take a shot at it, okay.
And I nominate Angela.
All right.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Okay, modification to the agenda. We are going to move up item number 7 above item 6. So discussion on pickleball courts in Alloway will become item 6. Any other modifications? Okay, if not, I'll take a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Okay, public appearances?
Let's do the minutes, number 4.
Oh, skipped over that. Okay, a motion to approve the minutes from November 27th, 2018. Wow.
That's the last time.
Yeah, that's not much going on in parks over the winters.
No, and then some cancellations for other reasons too. So,
okay, so I think we had a motion. Yes.
Motion.
Okay, and a second.
A second.
Okay, all those in favor, say
aye.
Aye. All right. Okay, now public appearances. Sorry about that.
And before you jump. For the pickleball stuff, we'll do that under the pickleball item, so you guys don't have to talk right now during the public appearances.
Very next item.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village Alloway Bike Ped Committee. A little later on, you're going to be talking briefly about the study that was done on the State Box River Trail. It was a good start. That study, there were some good things in it, and there were some big mistakes, numerical, statistical mistakes in it. But what I wanted to ask was that this committee encourage legal access to the Fox River Trail for walking and for biking. We don't need the parking lots, that's all private property over there, specifically between West St. Joseph Street and Alloway Avenue, and also at Taft Avenue. There are access points, but people are cutting across private property there, and as that land becomes more valuable and they want to redevelop it, that land will no longer be accessible to pedestrians, and they're going to have to walk on the highway if they want to get to the site. So currently, the trail is at 2.9 something miles long in Alloway, not two, but it's about 3 miles long. And between Jimmy C's and Lazar, there's a mile and a half path with zero legal access. None of the neighborhoods, none of the condos can get to the trail. They get to it anyway, because I'm there. You cut across people's property. But as that becomes developed, there needs to be some sort of financial incentives to the owners of the property to allow the public to cross their property. There's insurance issues that come up and all sorts of things, but your study's gonna, that you're going to hear about later is going to say there should be legal access every half mile, and it goes for a mile and a half with zero access points. And nobody should have to walk on State Highway 57 in order to not break the law. Okay? Thanks,
Jim. Anyone else that wants to discuss anything other than the pickleball courts? Okay, then we'll go to agenda item 7, which is now discussion, or 6, I'm sorry, with discussion of pickleball courts. And
well, great. Thank you. Thank you for all for attending. This is an item, we're just going to discuss it tonight, get some information out there. make some preliminary thoughts and decisions, and then at a future meeting we'll bring it back for action item from the committee. But a few things I wanted to go through tonight was, you know, kind of an explanation of what is pickleball, and, you know, what we currently have here in the village, what we may like to look to have, you know, should the village provide courts, and if so, where. Some estimated costs that I've looked into for different types of options, and, you know, then some next steps. Bob, is it Fry or Frank?
Fry,
from Packer Line Pickleball Group is here, and I'm going to kind of hand it over to him, and he'll kind of give a little bit of background. He sent over a handout. Yes, let's see, we've got two here. Give these to you guys. And then I had also in our, I believe last week I sent a little item with regards to, you know, kind of some background on pickleball and what pickleball is. So so with that, Bob, go ahead and, you know, say a few things.
Okay.
And kind of talk to the committee about, you know, what
you guys I'll lead, and we got a lot of pickled people back.
That'll work.
Invite me around me to share their thoughts as well. So
you're just talking about players, not pickled people.
Right? Either one. You choose. You choose. It depends. So thanks very much for considering the idea of pickleball in Alloway. I think what I'd like to give you is just a very quick synopsis of what you have on the paper. It's pretty much self-explanatory. It's been called, over the last maybe 5-6 years, America's fastest growing sport. And I mentioned to someone that we go to the villages in the wintertime, and in the villages of a city of 100,000 people, we have over 200 pickleball courts. That are only outdoor pickleball courts, which is the largest aggregate of pickleball courts anywhere in the world, actually. But most retirement communities, many communities in the south, and it's now penetrating, obviously, north, to ultimately create the moniker that it is the fastest-growing sport. About 6-7 years ago, a group of us started what we call the Packer Line Pickleball Players, because we all like pickleball and we wanted to see it grow. It's not an organized 501c3. It's just it's a group of, really, we have 370 people on our email list. So it's grown exponentially over the course of the past couple of years. About 5-6 years ago, 7 years ago, when I started to play, we were really excited when we had 5 players come and play at pickleball at Edison, which is where we began playing on tennis courts that were lined for pickleball. Now you can see by the graph that's in front of you that we, on average, we did this study this past summer, that on any given day we have a minimum of 40 up to 70 to 80 people playing pickleball. And this is just at 3 locations. Fort Howard, over by the Railroad Museum, there are 6 dedicated courts. Edison, we have 8 courts, which are adjacent to Edison Middle School. We call it Edison. It's a good part of the Green Bay Park system. And then out in Howard, Suamico, and Idlewild Park, there are also 8 more courts out there. So it has grown from 6-7 years ago, where we were happy to have 5-6 players, to now, on any given day or night, you're going to see 40 to 70 people playing at different courts throughout the city. And that's only the outdoor courts. In the Brown County area, there are probably about 35 outdoor pickleball courts. Indoors, all the Y's have pickleball courts. The Croc Center has pickleball courts. Green Bay Tennis Center has pickleball courts. Western Racket has, I'm not sure if they still have, had a couple pickleball courts. So it's grown outdoors, and it continues to grow indoors. The primary age of the people that play within our group are adult. We haven't gone down much to the adolescent, the child at all, or even the young adult. The average age of our group is probably 55 to 60 years of age. But what we're seeing now is that almost all of the schools in the surrounding area in their PE programs are offering pickleball as a product that they can do in their gym or on their tennis courts that they have lined. The nice thing about pickleball, it can be played at a variety of different ages. You don't have to be, you know, young and athletic to do it. You can be old and non-athletic to do it. And you can be young and very athletic, or old and very athletic. We've seen it grow quite a bit amongst the older population because it's on a court that's about a third the size of a tennis court, so you don't move quite as much. Most people play doubles. A lot are venturing into the singles, which is a little bit different a game. But it's a game that is very easily played in doubles and one that provides really an excessive amount of exercise. You probably, if you've heard about it, you may have seen what it looks like. I'll just kind of pass, you know, these are the paddles. Don't call them rackets. That's not what it is. But this is the ball that it's played. It's, you know, played much like the wiffle ball that, you know, we played with when we were little kids at the parks. Much different type of a paddle than a ping pong paddle. Different paddle than a racket, than a tennis racket, and the like, or badminton. But they say it's a cross between badminton, tennis, and ping pong. So somewhere in between, you see that kind of sport occurring. One thing that has allowed us, I think, really to see a significant growth of pickleball in our community is that we created a schedule. We provided an opportunity for people to come to a spot, and you see that up on the board there. That's just schedules at three different spots. You see Edison in red on the top, Fort Howard schedule in the middle, and then Idlewild schedule on the bottom. And the nice thing about pickleball is that you think, you know, I can play in the morning, or I can play in the afternoon. I don't have to find one or two or three other men or women. I can go there, and I might be sitting there with 25 or 40 other people. What happens typically at Fort Howard on a Saturday morning where we have six courts between 8 and noon is you'll see, and Beth goes there a lot, you'll see all six courts filled with maybe 10, 15, 20 people in line waiting to rotate in. So you're sitting there with 40 people for 3 to 4 hours rotating in and out playing pickleball, which you don't have in other sports. You got to find somebody, you know, can you go play tennis this afternoon? I need two other people or three other people, and you can only find two, so you can't. You play cutthroat tennis, which isn't quite as much fun maybe as playing a doubles tennis. So we create a schedule that allows people from different skill levels, whether you're a beginner, an intermediate, or an advanced, man, woman, want to play mixed, or whatever, we create a schedule that hopefully attracts the different folks. One thing that we started this about a year and a half ago is what we call the Super Seniors Program. It began out of one of the programs we called Pickleball 101 at the Croc Center when we did a training program indoors. A lot of people didn't want the highly competitive play of a tournament type of a format, or the more aggressive kind of play that might occur on some courts. They wanted the social, recreational aspect of pickleball. So we started what we call the Super Seniors Program. It began initially for people over the age of 62. Well, we found people 61, 60, 59, 58 that wanted the same type of environment, and that has grown to 30 to 40 different people just within that group that plays indoors as well as outdoors, and it is just, we've seen it grow significantly. One thing that is also we've created out of Pacalan Pickleball Players, we do a lot of training, pickleball 101s, to let people know about the game, learn the rules and the skills that they need to possess to be able to play it. We do a more advanced thing called Take Your Game to the Next Level, where we try to impart more of the strategy of the game onto people so they understand how to play, to do it strategically, especially if they want to get into a tournament environment, which a lot of us do. We run about 8 to 10 tournaments in Green Bay every year, indoors and outdoors, that attract people literally from Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, and the surrounding areas. And they've gotten very popular, which is kind of exciting for us. So the last thing I just really talk about, what are some of the ideal characteristics of a pickleball court? It's nice to have dedicated pickleball courts so that you don't go with your pickleball people and find out, oh, there's three people playing tennis on that court. We can't play. We sit and wait. Having dedicated pickleball courts means that the courts are lined permanently. The courts have nets that are fixed to the court, and they're not tennis nets. You have a court like Red Smith. You have courts like out at Bellevue, Johnston Park, that are using the tennis nets. Well, tennis nets are higher than pickleball nets, so no true pickleball player is going to go hit a ball over 38 inches. Is that what the tennis net is? Something like that. Pickleballs are 36 on the ends and 34 in the middle. So you need an environment that encourages people to come to play in a spot that is really geared towards that sport. You won't do that for any other sport. Force that sport to go on in an environment that isn't made for that type of a spot. Parking, as you can see from the graph, you're seeing 20, 30, 40 to 60 people playing at different times or in tournaments. We'll get 60 to 70 people coming in tournaments. You got to have a place to park. You can't just assume they're going to bus in because there's no bus route there. Comfort facilities, you know, one space, our joke is Elms, Oaks, Maples. You choose which one you want. Well, a guy doesn't mind. Somehow, these women just don't, they want pine trees or something like that. You know, the physical environment, I think, is really critical. I know a number of years ago, courts were set up right up the hill behind Webster School on the two tennis courts. It was unsafe to play. The courts had cracks in them, the bumps. I mean, it's dangerous. Again, if you reflect what I said before, that the majority of the people are over the age of 50, well, we're not as graceful as we used to be, and we don't tumble and fall and bounce back up. So having a good surface is really critical to making a good, safe environment. And I think the most important thing, if you invest in it, you have to have a plan for the development of it. It just isn't going to happen. I mean, you can put up courts, and you might get, you know, mom and dad and the two little kids. Well, if that's what you want, that's great. And you might get a bunch of neighborhood kids riding their bikes, kicking balls into the nets. If that's what you want, then that's fine. But if you're really looking to have a pickleball program in the community, you really need to have a plan so that somebody owns the development of it. So you develop a schedule. You develop a program to teach people how to learn the game, and then how to progress in their skills, as you would in any other sport, from, you know, the peewee leagues to minor leagues to little leagues to Babe Ruth. You develop all that. It's much the same in pickleball. It's a great sport. It is called America's fastest growing sport. I suspect in our lifetime or soon thereafter, it probably would be an Olympic sport. We won't be in it, but we'll be watching from down, looking at it. So, but it'll be fun.
Well, great.
Thanks.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions at this time for Bob?
How saturated are the existing courts? I mean,
the three that you see up here, the two of them are the outdoors are the busiest. Fort Howard and Edison are really busy. And the busier nights at Edison, you'll get seven of the eight courts filled. A typical day at Fort Howard is probably going to be running close to five to six, almost always.
Yeah.
When we have that scheduled. And the neat thing that, you know, I talk about these numbers in that graph, which is really significantly understated. You know, my wife and I like to go practice and do a lot of drill work. Twice in the last week, we went over to Fort Howard, and three courts were filled, and I didn't know any one of the people. And very honestly, I think I thought I knew everybody who played pickleball in Green Bay. But twice that's happened, you know, that. So there are a lot of people that come to play that have no association with that schedule or Packerland pickleball players, but are loving the sport and ultimately will probably participate in one of those schedules. But I think from a saturation perspective, they do get busy. When you schedule it like that, it begins to draw the people because they come to the level of play. If they want the social play, they go to that kind of an environment. If they want the real competitive man play, they go to that. If they want competitive mixed play or women's play, they go to that schedule. So it really draws, it sucks them in.
I like to comment that if you do decide to put a program in place that expands four or more courts at once, two courts really doesn't help. It's good for family play, but it's not good for competitive. It's not enough space. There needs to be that growth, like Bob is saying. But the other thing is there are dollars. Right, there's dollars, there's grants. You can write grants. You can go to the Packer Association and Shriver Associations and ask for money. There are dollars out there to help towards the funding of these type of courts. They don't like it when we ask for the funding because we're a private organization, but for park and rec departments or other organizations, they do respond to that, and you go in queue and so forth, but there is monies to be helped. And I think anybody from Packerland Association would help develop a strategy to go for those grants if you want the assistance to do so.
And then help you develop the program. I mean, because we obviously all like pickleball.
Yep. Great. Anybody else want to comment at all?
I think what Bob said about having it organized like that does help for all of us who want to choose when to play and who we're playing with, you know, what level and that type of thing. If it wasn't organized like that, you would be always haphazardly taking a chance to go out to find other people. But like Bob said, Fort Howard, there's people on the courts playing there. So I really like what he said about having it organized.
Any other comments?
All right. I guess the next thing I wanted to touch base on was, you know, what do we currently have here in the village? Not only what we have for tennis courts, but what we have done so far for pickleball. Because over the years, we've had inquiries and you know, had interest where we tried to accommodate. One thing that you know, I wanted to start with would be, you know, as far as courts that we have, tennis courts. Currently, we have 4 locations. We did this past year lose one to the school district. It's still there, but I mean, it's now the school district's property at Webster Park. We have tennis courts at Green Isle, at Langlade, at Kiwanis, and East Lawn, and that's a total of 9 tennis courts that we currently have. As far as condition, some of them have recently been renovated at Langlade, for instance. Green Isle are pretty, very nice courts, but East Lawn is one court that does need work. That was one that's been on our, or is in our capital improvement plan for upgrading at that location, because it's cracked, like Bob said, cracked, dangerous, you know, even for tents, it's not a good product. So as far as pickleball locations, like you said, we did have some at that were just painted on the courts at Webster Park. In the past few years, handful of years, we've painted on the courts at Kiwanis Park and Langlade Park. At Kiwanis, we have portable nets that are available to set those up, which are pickleball-sized nets, but they're portable. Not the most convenient, because you got to come to the office, get a key, you know, go down, set them up, take them down, do all that type of stuff. At Langlade, they're painted right on the tennis courts, utilizing the tennis net, which, you know, are different sizes. With Langlade, we also saw an interest from not only individuals from, you know, groups like the Pac Line pickleball players, but also the YMCA. They contacted us, and they've started programs, so they're, you know, looking for space as well.
Can I make one comment about when you use a tennis court like Langlade, mm-hmm. or like Red Smith, or like out in Johnston Park? When you have the tennis net, I mean, the tennis court is this big. Yep. The pickleball court is this big. So when the ball goes behind me, at Johnston, mm-hmm. I actually measured it, I have to go 25 feet to get to pick up the ball every time it goes by me. Yep. Typically, like every other place, it's maybe 8 feet, mm-hmm. and bounces back off the cyclone fence. So usually when you take a tennis court, one tennis court equates to at least two pickleball courts. And 2 tennis courts, full-size tennis courts, like at Edison. We're trying to work with the Green Bay Park Department to convert Edison into at least half of those courts into dedicated pickleball courts. 2 pickleball courts would convert to 6. 2 tennis courts would convert to 6 pickleball courts. Yep. So it's a real detriment to think, I'm going to have to run 25 feet every time I miss mm-hmm. a ball. Mm-hmm. People won't go to that environment, plus the net is higher.
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's a temporary fix. We all know that. Mm-hmm. That the, you know, utilizing the tennis courts with the lines there, and then you're in competition with tennis players as well, like mm-hmm. you had said. So,
but again, at Edison, we don't have fixed nets, so we have 8 portable nets, much like you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. So when we play at Edison, we put up the nets every time we play. Takes about 3 minutes to put one up and 3 minutes to take it down. So it isn't much. Mm-hmm. And they're in a shed there.
Sure.
We have probably 25 people who have a key for that shed.
Sure.
So that works fairly well.
Sure.
Without having dedicated courts.
Right. No, good points. With that being said, the as far as the community and what we currently have out there for tennis courts and temporary pickleball courts. Would be, you know, those 2 locations currently. I guess, you know, the question to be asked then is, should the village, you know, proceed and look at providing you know, standalone courts just exclusive to pickleball, or, you know, kind of continue down the same path that we have done. You know, Bob's correct. Pickleball is an exploding sport. And, you know, as far as tennis goes, what I see is the pickleballers of today used to be tennis players of the past. And tennis isn't necessarily as popular as it used to be. So, you know, the courts that we currently have, are they being used to their fullest potential? In my opinion, I would say not all of our locations are. So, you know, if we would look to, if the village would look to, you know, convert some courts, where would we look? You know, up here on the screen are some options of locations of where we currently have tennis courts. And I just want to run through them and kind of give you a bird's eye view of what, you know, what they could potentially look like, some pros and some cons to each location, and then some kind of rough estimates that after discussing with other communities that have installed, you know, I talked to Rex over in Ashwaubenon. They put theirs in 2014, I think it was. I think the city of Waukesha just contracted out. They're putting those in the summer. They're putting in some courts. So I've got, you know, some pretty decent numbers from local. I did reach out, receive, you know, replies back from people all across the country, knowing that, you know, the prices are different, but the demand is there. It doesn't matter where you're at, it seems like. So the first location up here is East Lawn Park. East Lawn is located in the northeast corner of the village, right along the river, and as a matter of fact, it butts up, you know, right to the city of Green Bay line. That court, like I said, is in need of reconditioning. Whether we convert it or if we keep it tennis, it, at some point in the near future, we're going to have to do some work to that court. Being that that's a single court and, you know, looking at the measurements and some things like that, that current space could accommodate three courts. Orientation is not ideal, but that kind of north, I believe north to south is typically how you typically want to orient a court, you know, because of sun and some other factors. But converting a court like this, some pros, there's good parking there. That park is not utilized that frequently, so there's always plenty of parking there. There are restroom facilities there. They would need renovations as well at the building. That current restrooms are not compliant, so we would need to do some work with that. This location, if you look back here, another pro is this open area here could be some future expansion even. You know, there's plenty of space there that you could add on new courts if needed or if wanted. A conversion, a rough estimate of conversion of this would be $45,000 to $50,000. And that would be, you know, going in and putting in, you know, taking out the bad asphalt or milling it down or, you know, repairing it and putting new asphalt in and painting and nets and everything. Like I said, some negatives are the court condition. Fewer courts, only three. And as you heard, ideally at least four or more for, you know, groups to be able to utilize and numbers of people that typically show up. Location, it is kind of a hidden park, which can be a positive or a negative. And then, like I said, that restroom access, the village would have to do something with regards to, you know, the facilities operate and work, and they're, it's just that we would have to do some things to make them ADA compliant, just to bring them up to par with that. So
I have one quick question.
Yes.
That the first image, that
yep.
the way it's mowed, it makes it almost look like topography. Is it a pretty level lawn?
It's actually pretty flat. That's okay. It's a location where they the village used to have an ice rink there.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually pretty flat. Good question. Next location is Langley Park, and this is right behind the YMCA. You know, with this, a couple of pros is that court is in very good condition. The village just did some renovations there in 2013, 2014, right in that time period. So the courts are in very good condition. They're resurfaced, so they're nice and smooth. And I was out there today. There's only one or two cracks, so it wouldn't take a whole lot of work to, you know, fix any issues with the surfacing. Another possibility is working with the YMCA, you know, on programming or you know their use out there as well as groups such as the pickleball players.
And they do have two courts in the gym.
Correct.
At the
Yep. And they, that's a good point. They do have indoor courts there, so you know during the poor weather or during the winter, you know they can utilize their space there. Again, possible expansion. This location also has an old ice rink, so there is space that if you could expand and add additional courts there. And with this spot. Being that it's two full-size tennis courts, that could potentially accommodate up to six pickleball courts with the sizes and some spacing around the courts as well. With regards to a couple of negatives, the parking, depending on time of day, could get a little tight, you know, with the use of... at the YMCA with the use at the school right next door, so that could get a little tight. There are restroom facilities here as well. This, in my opinion, would potentially be the least costly because you wouldn't have to do any work really to the surfacing itself other than painting it, putting in new nets, some fencing. You know, with something like this, anywhere $15,000 to $20,000 potentially.
Again, I think the other thing to add to that is outdoor pickleball is primarily played during non-school times.
Mm-hmm.
We play during the summer. We play from maybe mid-May if it gets warm to maybe mid-October. So the rest, outside of those months, you go indoors because it's cold.
Yep.
So in the summertime, there is not as much activity at the school, obviously.
Right. So that, you know, that would provide additional parking at, you know, at that location. Yes, Gina?
So with East Lawn, because that one does need reno, you were saying that the tennis courts themselves are
yes.
in bad shape.
Yep.
So what's the do you have any idea what the cost is to... redo the tennis courts?
With regards to doing the whole complete...
Because if... I'm just wondering what the price difference is to reno it to
right,
tennis versus renoing it to...
Oh, with regards to if it's going to be tennis versus pickleball. Really, there's not too much difference because I would say that the only difference is maybe a little bit more paint and... posts and nets. You know, you're going to have multiple courts. So you're going to have, you know, a tennis court at East Lawn would be one net, two posts and one net, and where you put three courts, so you'd have, you know, six posts,
and
you know,
East
type of
East Lawn
thing, so.
Is in the queue, is in our capital improvement to be upgraded anyway.
Correct.
Langley has already been done, so now we have to spend...
More,
in essence,
to
upgrade
there.
I'm just trying to, like...
Yep. No, good points, good points. And that's why I wanted to give you all the options out there so you could see the different costs and the different locations and that as well. Yeah, but that's a good point. You know, if you're going to do a court, have to do a court anyway, do you convert that one as opposed to one that's already been done, more or less? So.
I have a question on that. Could
yes.
that court be expanded?
At if it that first converted? One?
This one? Pickleball.
This one here? At
yes.
Yep. And it could, yes.
Four courts.
You could, because you could even go, you know, farther this way.
Sure.
You know, you could renovate it, but then also add, you know, what those costs are. You know, we have to figure it out and get estimates and that. And you could even go, you know, farther to the, you know, northwest there up in this area, too. You know, so you could do a combination, per se. Utilize the space of that old one, but add new as well. Good question.
So you said it was in capital project for future for that park?
For the tennis court renovation.
For the tennis
Correct.
Court.
Correct.
So how long has it been in the existing condition that it's in right now?
Well, the existing condition, it seems to get worse every year.
Right.
But with needing to be worked on, it's been that way since I've been here.
Okay.
And I've been here for almost 5 years now.
Okay.
4.5 years.
Okay.
So.
Do you know what year it's planned for, Chris?
It was originally planned for this year, but it looks like at earliest next year.
So for the consideration, just to mention it, that as you go forward with looking at the cost, if the cost of putting in temporary netting helps alleviate but gets us courts
mm-hmm.
sooner than later, that's something that we would definitely be interested in.
No, good point. And
you know, it doesn't have to be the way we need it now, but mm-hmm. with the surfacing and the lines, we can definitely pick up nets ourselves and then have at least have the space available.
You know, with regards to the poles and the nets, that's minimal compared to the overall. You know, you're talking maybe $500 versus, you know, the most expensive part of this, obviously, is the asphalt or the surfacing, you know. But, so, you know, it's, you know, could be a good partnership, too, you know, working with a group like that of, you know, doing the, you know, working with them on fundraising or getting, you know, monies for the nets or the poles or whatever. That's a potential.
Yeah, it's just a point. It kind of goes along with what you just said. It depends on what your vision is. Bob mentioned that there's tournaments. You know, Alloway is big into festivals and wonderful festivals. And we could link some of those kinds of things if we had a facility in Alloway to support that. So if you're thinking about tournaments and expanding, then your choices are more obvious than if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Does the, when I look at the map and the comp
sure,
plan about
sure.
where the different parks we're talking about are located,
yep.
are there populations around any of these that would make it make more sense? Where, you know, it's walkable for so many more people at Langlade, for example, I don't know, I'm asking,
right.
you know, are people coming from certain parts of town that then alleviate parking needs, or is it not a big deal? It's a small community and there's not that much traffic.
I guess the only way I can answer that is I've had inquiries at Langlade Park by someone that lives right next to the,
yeah.
you know, right next to the park. Other than that,
are they in this room?
No, they're not in this room. They're a good friend. They're a good friend of some people that are in this room.
you know, other than that, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it, you know.
Easily accessibility because for highway and in and outs are very, very desirable.
Sure.
Because as most of us that go to Fort Howard are Eastsiders. Alloway people, the Pier people, Ledgeview. We are going over to Fort Howard right now to get that location, and it's in a very easy proximity to get to. So, that's another.
Okay.
Excuse me?
Yeah, sure.
I was with three friends over the weekend, and we biked along the East River Trail. I'm not sure what the name of that park is. It's only got two tennis courts there. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it Kiwan?
This one?
No.
Is it that one with the new, with the brand new playground there?
Yeah, we could hardly see the blue lines, and one court was being used by some tennis players.
Sure.
And then, of course, the nets were higher, and that, as Bob said, you know, that's a deterrent. But it's nice because you're along the trail, and those rackets, those paddles fit so easily into your bike that it is nice to be on the path there.
Sure, sure. No, good point. Nice segue. Goes right into the next location, Kiwanis Park, which we have two courts at that location. There are temporary lines painted on these courts, and these are the ones where you need to set up because of how they're painted. I think there's only two. I don't believe we did four.
Yeah.
But that you set up the temporary nets at this location because they utilize like half of the tennis court on each side currently. So
how does that work to get the temporary net? Like if you were going to play on the weekend, I mean, you'd have to
make arrangements. Right? Correct. Okay. Yeah, because they're in a locked room at that facility.
How much utilization is there?
Hardly any. Hardly any. So we hardly ever. We hardly ever have anybody request, and that could be a situation where people just don't know that they're available. So this location. Some positives are the courts aren't in terrible condition. They could use some work there, but you could do six courts at this location as well. It is a little bit more centrally located off of the trail. There are restroom facilities there as well, and parking is adequate during the daytime. A negative, though, with this location is that it's also one of our locations for soccer. So in the evenings or some weekends, it gets quite busy with our soccer groups for the amount of parking space that is available there would become inadequate. Like I said, the space would accommodate up to six courts safely, I would think. And there, to redo this one, you would probably need to do some work to the courts or to the surfacing themselves, to make it safe. You know, there's not a ton of cracks there, but you'd have to do some work. So this could potentially be, in that 60,000 to 70,000 range. You know, if you were to have to go in and say grind it down a little bit and resurface it, so this one might. And of the courts that get utilized for tennis, I think that these are probably second behind Green Isle. Green Isle obviously gets the most use tennis wise, but we do see people that utilize these for tennis, where some of the other locations not quite so much. Then the last location is that I have on here is Green Isle. And my recommendation at Green Isle would not be to convert to tennis courts because that is our most popular for tennis court use. But, could you put in adjacent to this location some new courts? You know, for instance, right off the end, there is space that, would be able to accommodate up to six courts, require obviously kind of from scratch construction. Positive is location. That's our most popular park, most popular location. Everybody pretty much knows where Green Isle is. That's also a negative. It's our most popular park and they have use there. That location, on weekends especially, gets very full. And soccer nights, and football nights, and softball nights, and baseball, So, exactly.
Oh, yeah, runs.
Right. another positive, plenty of parking when it's not in heavy use, you know, during the daytime, during the summer, it doesn't get a lot of use, you know. But, you know, like I said, on the weekends or in the evenings, it does. You wouldn't lose tennis courts because you'd be adding on to a location that would be adjacent. Another possibility, this would be a location where I could potentially see lighting, you know, for not only the pickleball courts but the tennis courts. With regards to, you don't have neighbors around, that you would have concerns with any court lighting or things like that. You know, some of the other locations, they have neighbors adjacent to the park or, you know, close to where there might be some opposition. Like I said, as far as negatives go, would be new construction, heavy park use. You know, looking in the realm at this location could be $80,000 to $90,000 with regards to, you know, having to start from scratch and, you know, doing all the excavation and the, you know, construction process. So.
Question.
Yes.
When I found this one in the document, it looks like it's right on the river too. Is there any concern about that area right now, the water and future if we pave more?
With regards to flooding,
yep.
Many of our parks are along the East River, yep. So that's always a concern with any use that we have. I don't know that, you know, there would be any issues with regards to damage or, you know, anything like that with a hard surface. But you know, as far as use at times could potentially, you know, obviously in March that park was completely flooded. The last couple of issues where we've had high water, the courts haven't, the water hasn't gotten high enough to affect the courts. You know, we've seen it over the trail or over the roads in some locations, but, you know, nothing that would affect the courts at all.
So. And even to that point, if you were really concerned about the water issue there, number one, March is too cold. You're not playing outside anyway at that point. But if you go just to the west of those courts and between the ball diamond and the woods where that big basketball diamond, that doesn't get a lot of use. You could maybe put that right there. I mean, if you were looking at making Green Isle locked-in place.
Sure, sure.
If you're familiar with that park, mm-hmm. to the west between East River Drive,
there is some space.
Yeah, there's some space right there too.
Over by the basketball court.
I like the Kiwanis option.
So
because it's centrally located.
Would adding those that additional area, would that be enough to trigger needing a stormwater pond?
Probably. Okay. And it would, depending on how they were constructed, being in a floodway.
Yeah.
It might require some other studies and some other permitting and things like that. Yeah, probably know quite a bit about that.
So all in all, we're better off probably just converting what we have.
Just saying. Yeah. No, that's a good point. This last one, I just wanted to show you. This is in Ashwaubenon. This is Fort Howard Park. So what they did is they converted tennis courts and they expanded and included, you know, put a basketball court in there as well. So but they, you know, put the six courts in, and I believe Rex said the whole project cost, you know, with some trails or access pathways and some other things, about $120,000 5 years ago. So, but here's a kind of an overshot of what that location looks like. So, but
did they get grants for that?
I don't believe so. Not at that time. They did not.
They were trying to utilize one of their parks to be more useful because it wasn't being used as much. So that was one of the issues, and the crowds that were there were not maybe healthy crowds. So it's brought in a lot more healthier environment for that region, from what Rex was talking about. Mm-hmm. I talked to Rex before about some other things.
You know, back to that question of, you know, should we provide standalone courts? We have received many, many over the years, many requests that
you know, locations because it is a growing sport. You know, in the interim, I guess you could say that we've, you know, installed some temporary fixes, which even those are probably inadequate for the numbers that they're seeing around the, you know, the area with regards to, you know, the not only Alloway but other communities around.
And then the real dilemma with the temporary fixes, as a group, we don't promote it.
Sure.
You know, we promote the places where we can go play and play the kind of
okay.
schedule that we're talking about. And it just it's easy to set up, play, and enjoy the play and the people. So the temporary fixes we probably just don't promote.
Sure, sure.
Because we don't have to.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of, so we're talking about having temporary lines and checking out nets for tennis to pickleball. Have you ever heard of pickleball tennis for? Since tennis has become less popular and pickleball more popular?
I have not. I guess it would be dependent on how the court would be set up. Okay. If you look at this one, for instance, you know, they've got the permanent nets set up, which would be right in line with down the middle, you know, with some fencing in between their courts there. So you'd have to set them up this way, then they'd have to be temporary or something along that lines. You know, does the village currently have adequate number of tennis courts or even, you know, more than enough, you know, for the need? We haven't done a study or anything like that, but if you see, you know, where most of our usage is, it's at Green Island Kiwanis, you know, with regards to you people that utilize the courts for tennis. So, you know, that's kind of in a nutshell of some locations. You heard from the group as far as, you know, what they've promoted, what they utilize, you know, what their needs have, what they see the needs are and the future. You know, what are our next steps as with regards to the village, with regards to our committee? You know, looking at picking a location, what would be the best spot for us to concentrate efforts on? What would the cost be for, you know, whatever we decide to do, getting cost estimates for our budgetary purposes? You know, and then... would that be an item that would be, you know, proposed in this next budget cycle? You know, what kind of a time frame would we be looking at doing? So, you know, my professional opinion is that it is on that list of growing sports that, you know, we see some sports that are declining. This is one that's going up, and the demand will continue to increase. And as far as what we see in the region, in the area here, we don't have a lot of options, or players don't have a lot of options, and you see a lot more communities looking towards, you know, installing these type of assets into the community. So, Jim.
I'm Jim O'Rourke. I'm a realtor. And... the temporary nets in the sheds, the question being is, you know, how you get access to those when you're out. The technology's out there right now for realtors to give somebody a one-time passcode. And okay. So there's ways to set up a shed so that somebody with a phone app can just get a code to get into it, you know, that one time and just reserve it and have it pretty flexible. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't mind...
No, and that's a good point. The technologies nowadays for access and things like that, you know, everything comes with a cost, obviously, but, you know, there are some options with regards to, you know, some of those type of things as well. Just checking my notes here, making sure I didn't miss anything.
We have contractor codes. We give people a contractor code. They can get into a house one time.
Okay.
The other thing I'd like to offer, too, is reallocation of funds, capital funds. If the existing East Lawn is not considered as an option because it's been like that for a long time, the ability to reallocate those funds to do something quicker would be nice to know that you've looked at that option as well. I know in the industry. businesses, you juggle capital cost all the time. So I don't know about you guys for municipalities, but.
Chris, I have a question.
Sure.
You probably should know this, but like when there's events like this, where there's like a scheduled
sure,
time,
sure.
Similar to softball leagues, football leagues, the soccer league, do they pay the village for the use of that facility?
It would be dependent on how they are organized and how they set it up. It could be a partnership where very similar to a youth sports organization, for instance, where you have an agreement in place. If they were to, and something like that, then you got to allow for access, which it sounds like they do, for access for all, and provide for all. So, and depending on the time frame of the day, even, is it a time that something is heavily utilized, or where, middle of the day, where, typically it's our parks aren't utilized that much. Would there be fees involved with regards to court rentals, depending on the situation? The way our fee schedules are set up, if it was, say a tournament or something like that, there could potentially be fees associated with something like that.
I can tell you how we do it right now, just to kind of give you an idea on how it's done maybe outside of the area. We don't pay anything at, like, Edison or Fort Howard or Howard Swamico. If we do a tournament there, the tournament is run, we run the tournament, but the charge that the $30 charge to play goes back to Green Bay Park Department, goes back to Howard Swamico Park Department, goes back to Fort Howard. So we don't make any money off of it. We run it.
Sure.
So we don't pay anything. But typically what happens from just playing at dozens of different places is that some places will have like an annual membership fee, pretty much nominal, $25 or $30, and you can play any time of the day or week when it's open play. Other, in addition to that, they may have a one-time, if you want to just come, you're visiting that city and you want to play, you pay $5.
Mm-hmm.
But then somebody has to be there to collect that $5,
sure.
Which you're paying somebody to sit there, and if somebody comes, and I did that down in Naples.
Okay.
Played in a tournament down there. Went to play at a park. When it wasn't the tournament day, went to a different park. They had 20 courts approximately. They had a paid staff person there who checked you in and
okay.
picked your $5.
Okay.
And all those 20 courts were filled completely, with either annual memberships or one time. So there's hassles either way.
Mm-hmm.
Free is the best.
obviously, but
we're gonna charge for
right.
We are
but,
retired.
But things like that, even if it's, fee associated with a tournament, those, could be utilized for upkeep of courts, because as we know, it doesn't matter what we build out there, things don't last forever. They require, maintenance, they require replacement and that. So, I would think it would be more along the lines of, an agreement in place. Similar to what we've done with our youth sports
tennis players
and that. So,
mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
We don't need a decision today.
No,
right?
No.
This is just for
correct,
discussion. Today.
Correct. This is just
okay.
for discussion tonight. I want to thank all you
thanks for having us
for coming
yeah,
and giving us the information that your expertise and everything like that. So what I want to do from here is then that next step is we'll do a little bit more research, get the ball rolling per se, pick a location if that's what the committee wants to do, kind of that direction on what the committee wants to do. And kind of go forward from there, and ultimately make the recommendation to the village board.
Feel free to join us at any of those, just to view if you want. It's pickleball is real fun to see on YouTube, but once you get involved, like we all say, it's a passion. It's fun, and
fun
it's addictive, and it's social as well as physical. So it's amazing the number of friends you make, and you don't make that many friends once you get out of your workforce environment, you know. But it's a lot. There's a lot of friendships that are established. So just something to consider if you want to view. You just stop by any time. We're around to watch us.
Also, I don't know if you brought up the grant thing.
Yes.
Grants.
Yes.
It might be a good idea to look into that. You just never know. Mm-hmm. My friend who owns, or the president of GLK Foods, they do a sauerkraut, but now they got into pickles. If you ever had Old Snap pickles. So a couple of his workers, they looked around, and they got a $100,000 grant from Michigan to promote pickleball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have pickle factories here, don't we?
Yes,
we in Green Bay? Don't we still have pickles?
I don't think anymore.
Darn it.
Not
now.
But, I mean, just might be worth your while,
sure,
just to look.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. No, and I know somebody that offered to help us out with that.
I got a whole bunch of notes on other communities at a DNR and other federal and state levels that have done it. I think locally, there's a lot of companies that, you know, Public Service, Packerland Association, Packers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, we just have to put together the justification. So.
Great.
I've worked with Chris. He can get a hold of me if he needs help.
Well, thank you all very much.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Be on the courts.
Yes.
All right.
You tell Randy. He's coming. When he's in town.
Yeah.
He's got to teach me pickle.
He'll be here soon.
We got lots of paddles. So, no excuse.
Hey, Jim.
Thanks, guys.
You play, don't you?
I was going to ask.
Started, yeah.
You started yet?
Is it addictive yet?
I am.
Yeah.
My knees.
You hate taking time off.
Take care.
I'm going to get back to pumping.
Wow. Right?
All right. Well, that was quite a discussion on pickleball. Now we're moving on to item number, let's say it'd be 7 under information. So introduction of new member.
I'll let her introduce herself. Danielle, kind of give a little bit of background. And, well, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for showing an interest in our committee. And kind of give a little background about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, so I'm from Minnesota. Not a sports fan, so you don't have to throw anything at me. I'm from rural Minnesota, southern Minnesota. Lived in the Twin Cities for 20 years. My husband's from Green Bay area, and we decided it was a good place to raise our family and be closer to my extended family. So we moved back last summer, and I work in the park design, urban design industry, so this is kind of a relevant topic for me from my day life, so just all good things. Look like a cool opportunity to get involved in the community and get to know folks and, you know, be a part of the place. So.
Welcome.
Nice. Welcome.
Yeah, my husband's from Minnesota. Good. We can bond over that.
But he is a football fan.
Oh, well.
The big question now is who has more lakes.
Oh, yeah.
It's always been a big question, but yeah, I heard it even come up again lately.
I came from the one county in Minnesota that has none. Zero lakes.
Wow.
So I don't even care about that.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Upcoming events. Just a quick rundown of some upcoming events that we have going on in the village. Miracle Lake opening day is this Saturday, June 1st, right over here at Optimus Park. If you've never been there, it is quite the event. Very well attended, especially opening day. Good luck finding a place to park. I would recommend parking here and walking the block. They're actually doing a ribbon cutting this Saturday to kind of showcase some of the improvements that we've done this past year. From the playground, with the addition to the playground, and then all the new parking and the renovation of the parking lot. So they're planning to do a ribbon cutting, and our village president's going to be the speaker. So he'll be there in attendance. But that's this Saturday. Starts at 8 o'clock. Alloway Fest, Sunday, June 9th at Green Isle Park, we hope.
And we were talking before with the amount of water that's down there now, we're going to talk to them about just just in case, what's your backup plan type of thing. But we hope we won't have to worry about that. So that's Sunday, June 9th. Our movies in the park this summer. June 7th is Ferdinand, and I believe these are all on Friday evenings. July 12th is The Grinch, and that's the newest one. And then August 11th is Ralph Breaks the Internet. So if you have children or you like Disney-type movies, partake. And that's weather permitting, obviously. If it rains, unfortunately, we have to cancel, or if the weather's poor. So we had to do that for one last year. Typically, very good attendance at those. So those are at Green Isle Park on the baseball diamond. Pooches and Pints, summer kickoff. We actually have two this year. We expanded from one from last year, our inaugural Pooches and Pints event, to two events this year. So first event, which is the summer kickoff, is Thursday, June 13th at Green Isle Park. And that starts at 4 o'clock. I believe it runs 4 to 8. Then we're holding a second one, which is called Barktoberfest, and that's Saturday, October 12th. Kind of a playoff of Oktoberfest, obviously. But being on Saturday, I believe that's 12 to noon is that event. So, again, hopefully the for our summer kickoff one event coming up, that the park dries out. So,
lots of activity happening then. First, seventh, ninth,
yes,
13th.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, there's a lot going. Well, as soon as it hits summer, that park is busy every weekend.
Yep.
You know, if it's not an event going on, a run walk that, you know, somebody is doing, or you know, renting out the pavilion for weddings or parties and stuff. So, yeah, typically the pavilion is rented out at least a year in advance during the summertime. So, so those are the events we have going on, you know, coming up in the next month plus. So, all right. Next item, just wanted to give the committee, it's a few months later, but give you a little information on a study that was done that Trevor Fuller worked with a student from St. Norbert College. His name was Riley Schreiner. Riley came in and did an internship project for the village on Fox River Trail connections and Riverside Drive crossings, and kind of the whole what do we have, what should the village have, and what's the path forward for utilization of the Fox River Trail. As everyone knows, it's, you know, a very, very popular location. It gets utilized by people not only from the village, but, you know, throughout the region. And one issue that we've found over the years is, you know, are there enough locations for people to, you know, gain access to it, you know, from our community? And you know, if so, or you know, either way, you know, are there safe ways for people to be able to get to it, you know, within the community? So Riley came in and worked on this as a project through school. He was here, I believe, a couple of months, month and a half. I don't recall the exact extent of time he was here, but. You know, a few things that he, for his project that he did through school there, is that, you know, he wanted to take a look at, you know, some of the things that are currently in place. Take a look at, you know, what we have out there, what's existing, what kind of plans are already out there, and then talk to people, whether it's, you know, stakeholders, and gather information from them, or, you know, even...
Oh, there's turkeys. I'm sorry. There's turkeys in your in the front yard there. I've never seen turkeys over here before.
I was
going to
say, we see them all the time.
Turkey!
Bang.
Bang.
Right.
I see him over by St. Norbert. I never see him over here.
I thought that was an old squirrel joke.
Am I that boring? But back to the study.
Sorry.
Having safe ways to get there and being able to utilize it. You know, we've all known that it's not the easiest location to access, you know, with regards to you're crossing a very busy roadway to get there if you're, you know, either walking or biking. So this was a step that the village wanted to undertake in just gathering information and having giving a student an opportunity to do a project, but also then having, you know, outside eyes looking at it as well, not just, you know, staff and that. So you know, with regards to, you know, some of the things that Riley came up with, you know, obviously it's on an old railroad bed. It's a rails to trails project. In Alloway, you know, the whole trail is about 25 miles long, but in Alloway we have 2 to 3 miles of, you know, of trail that runs obviously throughout the whole length along the Fox River. You know, we have currently have or will be constructing 5 public access points in the village. We are actually within this year, we're constructing another access point by the Heritage Hill Pond, I guess you want to call it, right across from GBCI, right across from the prison. There'll be a new access point at that location. So we have access up on the north end at by Jimmy C's area, which is the Marine Street area. There's access there. There's access at Lazar. There's access at 172, which those two are only a block apart. Then there's access down at Sunset Park. There's also, then there'll be that new location, which will be across from the prison. Not too far outside of our boundaries, there's an access at Grinion. And there's an access on the south end at Fox Point Boat Launch as well. So, you know, there's, you know, not just, you know, there's 5 in the village, but then you talk about those other 2, about 7. So, Riley went out, he did a public survey, online survey, social media, various other avenues, asked several questions, had about a 10-question survey that he wanted to gather some information from. Got about 350 respondents through that survey, which I don't know that we had that many for our park and rec plan, right? Which surveys are very difficult to get a lot of, you know, involvement from, you know, people. So as far as interviews, in-person interviews, he interviewed, you know, stakeholders, user groups, and government entities. So he talked to Brown County Parks Assistant Director Matt Creasy. He talked to individuals from DOT, Wisconsin Department of Transportation, because of, you know, the involvement with Riverside Drive. Spoke with individuals from Friends of the Fox River Trail. Talked to people from some bicycle groups and things like that. So he got some input from those people as well, of, you know, some real relevant stakeholders and that. And then, you know, like I said, he looked at our community plans that we currently have that we've utilized in the past, whether it's the bike and ped plan, park and rec plan, you know, whatever, our comprehensive outdoor rec plan. He kind of looking at all those and bringing anything that we have already out there, kind of, you know, compiling that and bringing it together and looking at some of the things that have been proposed over the years. Or and that. So One of the items that he, you know, in the survey he looked at was the usage of the trail, and overwhelmingly, obviously, 65, almost 66% of people utilize the trail 1 to 3 times a week, and you know, which makes sense. And I've heard that even, since we started plowing the trail in the wintertime, obviously it's getting used all winter long too, and that. So, his research question, his big question that he wanted to ask during this whole process was, you know, should there be another access point in Alloway? And if so, where? You know, does the village, you know, need to have access points, any additional access points, or are there enough adequate, you know, to accommodate the usages out there? You know, and this is all of through his survey is where, and, you know, through talking with the stakeholders, you know, is where he got his information from. So from, you know, the information he obtained, he saw that there really wasn't a need for new access points by the number that are there, but acknowledging also that there are gaps there. They're not all evenly spaced along the trail. You know, the village, you know, the access points on average are about 2/5 of a mile in between. But that's an average. That's not necessarily reality, because we know that between Lazar and Marine Street, there really aren't, there are no public access points that are, that you can get to from public access. You know, there's St. Francis Park, but how do you even get to St. Francis Park, you know, at this point in time? There's no public access from it. So he did find that as far as all the communities along the trail, Alloway has the most access points within their community. And like I said, that, you know, there are some gaps within there that could be looked at. So what he found it from his research was that there was more concern with Crossing Riverside Drive, which I think we can all understand, you know, is what, how do you get across to get there? You know, whether there's an access point there or not, how do you get there? And then how do you get, say you cross Riverside Drive, how do you get along Riverside Drive to get to an access point? You know, and i.e. sidewalks, you know, do there need to be sidewalks along it? When the state was looking at reconstructing that road, a few years, well, many years back, but it was on their plan to do that work, you know, upcoming, and the village had anticipated that at that time, okay, we would look at putting sidewalks in, you know, and the state would be doing that work, and at the cost of, you know, at the state level. Well, since then, they've done some work to the road that has prolonged their anticipated construction by many, many years. So at this point, you know, they don't have a definite date of when they may come in and do reconstruction. So anything that the village was anticipating of sidewalk installation has been put on hold from the state's perspective. So, you know, are those some things then that the village could look at and say, you know, that there's an opportunity to maybe do something in the interim? You know, that's a question for the village to look at. And then another issue that from his responses was better lighting, you know, and I believe that has to do with more of, you know, the nighttime travels or anything like that along the trail. You know, that's something I think a little bit longer term, but there are also new innovations, new technologies that are making some things like lighting in remote areas a lot more feasible. So I think that is something that can, you know, be looked at down the road, you know. And obviously it's a state trail. It's maintained by Brown County Parks. So anything, you know, that would be done to the trail itself would be, you know, obviously in partnership or, you know, another entity. So,
Brown County maintains the entire trail, even this
Everything was in Brown County. It does actually extend into Calumet County just a little bit, but anything within Brown County, it's Brown County Parks and Rec. Yes. His question, what to do now? What should the village be looking at? Three key points that he proposed were sidewalks leading up to Riverside Drive, so access, from neighborhoods going towards the trail, going to the west. Looking at, obviously, sidewalks along Riverside Drive, so that once a crossing has been determined on how to best cross the street, you can cross and then maybe traverse north-south to get to an access point. And then also looking at more parking of, are there locations along there anywhere from DePere to Green Bay that would allow for people that are, accessing via car, for them to park. Currently, we have one location, really. Well, I shouldn't say that. Two locations that where you, if you're driving, you could park at Lazar and access there. Some off-street parking. We've got a little bit expanded area along that street that you could park and access there. Some parking up by Marine Street. That's some street parking there. Or there's street parking down by Sunset Park, but we don't encourage that necessarily, but people can park along the street there. But like I said, also with that, another block to the south, it's in DePere, but you got Fox Point Boat Lounge where there's parking there as well with an access point. Another thing, that he talked about were the crossings. And one question he had asked is he kind of divided the village, the length of the trail up into four segments, two being north of the 172, two being south. And it, for the most part, across the board, as far as crossing Riverside Drive, it was on average about 20%. And then the final 20% is that people replied that they don't actually cross Riverside Drive to get there. They either access it via car. With that, I just wanted to give you a quick overview of some information. I think this is a start of a discussion point of, these are some things then that the village can look at to kind of focus some efforts on for the future with regards to, how best to make sure that people can utilize, some of these recreational opportunities, in a safe manner. So, all right. You heard the presentation, right?
No, I didn't.
No,
but
Rob did.
Rob did
in the meeting. I think you,
I
Trevor,
was Plan Commission.
Trevor present there. You talked about it at Plan Commission. So,
yeah, it was very well done. It's one of those things that in the village we're kind of handcuffed by this state highway that goes right down the middle. That plans to do something are there, but for us to try to do something in advance of those, the state's real difficult to deal with, not deal with, but to work with on unplanned for foreseeable things,
right,
that come up. In five access points in a short stretch of road is not bad.
Right. And as it's been mentioned, that's five public access points.
And that's not really even the topic. The topic is safe crossing a Riverside Drive.
I think that's what Riley found more was that, especially in that survey, was that people were more concerned about getting across Riverside Drive safely than as far as finding an access point.
across that.
We got a river bridge.
That's scary. And you know what? That is a good point. And at some point in the future, we hope that that's an option.
What was that?
Of the railroad bridge. The railroad right away up here. I don't know everything about that situation, but from what I've heard, there's one train that utilizes it at a pretty infrequent time period. But it has to be decommissioned in order to become
anything
other than, you know, more of that rails to trails type of a thing. So it's, you know, obviously it's an option in the future, and hopefully at some point, still used, and hopefully at some point in the future that is an option to us.
Has there ever been any sort of conversation about, like, the DOT turning it back to the city, since it's not like it's the
highway?
It's not it's not a route to.
With regards to that roadway, I don't believe there ever has been. It is a collector and a thoroughfare to get people from Highway 172 to downtown Green Bay.
Sure.
And that's one reason why the speeds are what they are on that road as well. Because
the discussion was, after it was going to be redone, they looked at taking it back, and the discussion was that we didn't want the idea of maintaining it long term. So they looked at it carefully with Craig, and even if they gave us a brand new road, it was in the best interest to let the state take care of it.
That's a good option. Good point.
Can I back up to something that was said earlier? Jim, you had referenced during the public appearances, I'm just going to quote you. You said big mistakes in the Fox River Trail study.
Sure.
What were some of those big mistakes?
First of all, the trail in the study, and I didn't want to get him. He's a nice kid, and he did the best he could.
Go ahead. What were the big mistakes?
Well, the trail is not 2 miles long. It's 3 miles long. 2.9 something. So that's closer to 3 than it is 2.
Okay.
There's 3 access points on Heritage Hill property. Okay. Lazar. Two on either side of, you know, the main part, and then the Heritage Hill access point there. So it's just over 1.7 miles between Marine and Lazar. So the best point he said was that you should have an access point every half mile. Okay, so what that translates down to in our walkability study is that people like to walk a quarter mile. So you should always be within, if they're every half mile, you're always within a quarter mile of an access point. Okay, so if you do them every half mile, you're within a quarter mile of an access point. So it's 1.7 miles. There's a gap.
There is a long gap there. I agree with that.
And the
Where does the study come in at 0.5 miles every half mile?
What's that?
You said that the study said that it references every half mile.
So in the report, Matt said that, you know, in a perfect world, we're at 0.375 right now on average, and Matt said that we should have an average of every 0.5 miles, and he said that we were doing better than that. Well, that's on average. That doesn't take into account, you know, you can round it in a river that's on average a foot deep if it's 10 feet deep in the middle. Okay, so that's the difference, is that there's a gap of 1.7 miles from Jimmy C's to Lazar. So okay.
It's a long gap.
It's a long gap, and people... It's not a real gap. It's just a legal gap because people go through there all the time. They love using the trail. They cross public property. No trespassing signs have been popping up along the gaps. At Taft Avenue, there's no trespassing signs and, you know, no parking signs, and that type of thing is going up because people are worried about losing their private property to people who are coming and just using it to get to the trail. That's what it's about.
Just because I want to go back and I want to readdress some things.
Sure.
When you say big mistakes in the study, I'm hearing a lot of opinions, but where are the big mistakes?
Okay. 3 is 50% bigger than 2. Okay. I went to math in this thing. I was in third grade. I learned that early. So a 2 miles.
Okay, so the length of the trail is incorrect.
That's a big mistake. When you're dividing the number of access points into the number 2, you're going to get it different than when you divide it into a number 3. Okay, so 3 is bigger than 2 in everybody's book, except for the study. So and I've said this before, and everybody knows that it's a 3 mile long trail. Okay, LA has always been 3 miles long.
I just want to go back and readdress some of these. So what are some of the other big mistakes?
That we have plenty of access points and we don't need access points. So the point was is that the access points are supposed to, in the study they say every third of a mile. In reality, where people want to cross, in particular, our brand new Old Chapel Hill apartment complex, which is Park Star. They're a little island, high density.
I get it.
There's no walkable way to get to that point.
I totally understand what you're saying from an opinion standpoint. I'm just trying to identify the big mistakes.
I've told you, the mistake is that 2 is not 3.
Understood, okay. And I would agree.
Okay. The fact that a third of a mile and 1.7 miles is a big difference.
I would also agree.
Okay. So the point that I've always been making is that there's a need for legal access at West St. Joseph and Alloway Avenue, and then to a lesser degree at Taft. But the two big points, the study says that there should be, according to his mathematics, 2 access points between Jimmy C's and Lazar, and there's 0. So that is the point.
Okay, thanks.
I don't know if you've noticed, but sometimes we have a little bit of hostility going back and forth.
Because,
there's a discrepancy.
I feel no hostility right now. I just wanted you to point out the big mistakes.
I know. Well,
and I'm making a note of them. I'm going to go back and I'm going to check the
mileage was off by 50%, and the distance between stops on average. You weren't counting the gaps. You were talking in average. And there's 3 stops on the Heritage Hill property. So, you know, and then there's 2 stops on the north end, and there's 2 stops on the south end, and there's big gaps in between. And then finally, the crossing where the state and the village had the biggest disagreement was that the state says that pedestrian islands, refuge islands, medians in the middle of the road are better than stop lights and stop flashing lights. And that is where the village and the state have the biggest disagreements, and that's why we have the Hawk Crossing instead of the median island over by Sunset Park. And the median, the pedestrian safety island, according to the state, is a better traffic calming and safer process than stoplights crossing the road.
So I hope that they really consider those then when they redo that state highway.
Well, they were in the plans, and then the village said that they couldn't live with what the state was proposing, and it never, and the whole process was scrapped. So it's in the plans, they're available online, you can see where the islands are. And that took a lot. They spent a lot of money on these studies, but the pedestrian safety islands are safer than stoplights on the highway.
Well, I would say the study was valuable in the survey information we got.
Though. Absolutely.
I would agree that it would have been better if he would have looked at gaps rather than average based on how many access points we have, but ultimately, I mean, he put a lot of work into it. Good survey information.
No, and I think that's the main point to take from this is he set out to gather information for the village, and he did that. And now we have this information of that can be best utilized by staff and by village board and committees and that. On the best route forward now, and kind of you know, to look at those, and then, you know, we can move on and try to accomplish,
yeah,
you know, what everybody knows needs to be done. But I think he did a really, really well job.
Yeah.
I would agree.
That I don't think has been addressed or discussed is that other than street parking, we really don't have public parking with good access to the trail. I mean, you can park on Lazar, mm-hmm, but then you have to cross Riverside at Lazar, which is
risk. At Lazar, down towards the kayak launch?
Yeah, but there's only a couple.
Well, right. There's not a ton.
That's not a parking lot. That's still a street.
Right.
And so I think it's one of the difficulties that I didn't hear addressed in it is, you know, De Pere's got Fox Point and he's got Voyager. I mean, those are great parking lots with access to the trail. We don't have anything like that.
Right.
Even if it's on the east side of Riverside, we don't have a central parking spot where you can even funnel people to a place where you might work on a safe access. It's just random up and down Riverside, and then it's at your own risk to get across. And that whole parking issue, I think, has to be looked at somehow.
Right. And, public parking.
Public parking is what you're looking at.
And
because we don't have property
east
of or west of Riverside
like
De Pere does.
No. And I think that, and he did speak of that a little bit in his study, and I think that is something that, you know, a good point that needs to be looked at.
I don't know what the solution is, but I think it's part of the problem, is that you don't have people funneled to a central area where you can work on decent access.
Right. And I think if you look at some of the other studies that have been done, you know, the Riverside Corridor, you know, and Webster Corridor studies, that, you know, some redevelopments that have been proposed, and, you know, is that the opportunity to look at some of those options too? So, good question.
Good point.
Did they ever talk about like pedestrian bridges or?
It has been talked about and looked at. I think that.
There's one
in the
prison project.
There's one in the
prison
project?
In the prison project to get a zip line.
That's a zip line.
Well, and I'm curious, too, but like a bridge is infrastructure, and parking lots are infrastructure. So it's like, at what point are we going to leverage the right-of-way as a parking lot? It is public.
Yeah.
We are paying for it. If we're not parking on it, we're shunting stormwater off of it, and we're cleaning snow off of it. I mean, I know having your house parked in front of all the time is problematic. But I think there's probably a happy medium in there where
to convert a lane of traffic.
Well, it all costs something. Mm-hmm. So if we can, maybe not, you know, in this moment in this group, but think about those things too, because it's still public and we're still paying for it.
Mm-hmm. Good point. So, no, to answer your question, though, with bridges, they have been talked about, obviously, you know, the costs of things like that, space, not only bridges, tunnels, you know, is that an option, you know, to look at? Those items have been talked about. So, good. All right. Seems like forever ago now, but recap of the March 14th flood. I guess I just wanted to kind of give you a little update as far as, you know, the flood that happened was obviously caught us by surprise. Was a result of, you know, having ice-covered rivers, frozen ground and snow melts, and, you know, a whole combination.
Rain and wind.
And the wind being a big one. And as we've noticed, when we get a northeast wind, it typically tends to push the water in the bay back to the river, Fox River, which backs up the East River as well. So, with regards to locations, all of our parks along the East River did have some amount of flooding. Green Isle was probably our worst. If you were to look at the small pavilion on the south side of Green Isle Park, it was half underwater, if you recall. And, you know, we luckily had some on-the-ball staff that were able to get majority of our equipment, bigger equipment that we store down there for park operations. They got, were able to get that out of there before the water got too hot. So they transported all that equipment out and saved the village tons of money. Because one thing we found out afterwards, we kind of knew this, but we do not have insurance for locations that are within our floodways and stuff like that. So anything that would have been damaged by flood in Green Isle Park, in Kiwanis Park, in Riverview, I think, and Wheezy Park would not have been covered. East Lawn, for some reason, is covered. But we didn't have any damage up there.
Looks like we're going to store the equipment.
Right, right. But, you know, we did have some damage to things such as a couple of the fishing docks, fishing piers down at the at Green Isle Park. Some damage, very limited, I would say, to the pavilion and to the shelters. It was more cleaning issues that we had to deal with. We lost a few small, well, I shouldn't say small, a few items, mechanical items, some small equipment type items. We lost some supplies and materials, things like ball diamond dry. Well, it wasn't enough to dry everything up, so, but, you know, things like that. Our current tally to date for just the Parks Department, and this, you know, was a combination of equipment that we lost. Probably our biggest ticket item, equipment-wise, that we lost was a welder, which wasn't that much, really, a few thousand dollars. Our biggest monetary ticket item outside of our labor for cleaning was to have our electrician come in and have to check everything. And we did have some damage electrically, and we had to replace some things. So, you know, that was probably our biggest ticket item. And then our labor and equipment to clean things up and to get things repaired and replaced. So, all told, so far to date, we're looking at about $33,600. But which may sound like a big number, but it could have been a lot, lot worse. And we were pretty lucky that, you know, we had some staff that were proactive and you know, saved a lot of equipment, which saved, like I said, saved some dollars. And lucky that we didn't have more damage to infrastructure. So,
how frequent is that type of event?
100-year flood.
Well,
right.
Yeah, but
The last time that we had a flood like this, Lee, help me out. 1990-ish.
Okay.
Yeah, 90-ish. So,
90, yeah. The early 90s.
I was going to say 92 because yeah. I moved in 93.
Yeah.
Okay. And I had no water, but I heard that they were canoeing.
Right. Right. And that one, yeah. So it's.
But I don't think you could safely say we probably have another 30 years before it happens again.
No.
I think this
no.
is going to be more common. Right.
Yes. It's, you know, it's one of those infrequent things, but, you know.
It'll be more frequent.
I think, I agree, I think it'll be more frequent. To that extent, I don't know. You know, that
well,
was that was a large combination of different things.
Oh, yeah. Not,
and
I'm
we've
not
seen, and we've seen heavy rains and wind
yep.
since then
yep.
without having that extent. But, you know, the ground's not frozen, not ice jams, there's, you know, some
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah, and I think some things that you have to kind of keep an eye on and just living there since 93, I lived right by the park, so
mm-hmm.
I've seen that water go up and down. There was a point that you could walk out to the first pier and the bridge 3 years ago. I've never seen the base of the East River before then, you know,
sure.
and now it's in my driveway 4 feet, you know, mm-hmm. on that last one that we got. But I do think some of the that was all the stars lined up. Some of the problem is, you know, new development, especially over in the Bellevue area, where they keep going up, where water used to go over there is now coming over here.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think that's something that's got to be addressed now than later, because it's going to continue to be a problem as they get higher. And I always say that because we don't have a lot of new development over in Alloway, mm-hmm. so there's nobody's building up. Mm-hmm. So, I think Jim sees that all the time, being a realtor in this market.
Yeah, I think it's a large combination of things, no one specific item, but it's definitely something that we have on our radar now, and you know, we as staff will be discussing, you know, when it comes to future, whether it's equipment, operations, development, things like that. That's something that we definitely will, keep in mind.
But boy, that river's gotten cleaner. Not to change subjects, but there was kids across from my house that storm sewer. You know where I'm talking, Jim? That they fish over there.
Yep.
They're catching perch.
Yep.
The other day,
yep.
Perch,
really?
Out of the East River.
I just saw some kids walking down Alloway Avenue with their nets. And
yeah.
They're fishing. And
they're catching perch. That's unheard of. That's sheephead, carp, and sucker land over there.
Yep.
Now they're catching perch.
So,
any lessons learned? Anything that you would do differently in the future?
That's a good question. One thing we did do with one of our facilities, and our staff had previously done this, but one of our buildings, it was a steel building, but had fiberglass insulation in it. So that all got wet. Mm. Well, we pulled all that out, pulled the steel off the building, pulled all that out, and then put spray foam back in there. And they had done that in some other renovations of some property or some buildings, previously as well. So that's, kind of a lesson learned from before, that now we did that again. So if it happens again, we're going to make sure. Another thing that it was on our radar before this happened, but, we didn't get it done in time. Purchased some pallet racking for, to put our supplies and some smaller equipment up higher in our buildings, the stuff that we're not using every day in case it does flood. So some of those type of things, some of our electrical repairs we tried to accommodate, so any, install those meters a little bit higher, things like that.
Okay.
So, with regards to our reaction time, everybody did a great job. All the staff throughout the village, they were all available. Our water department did an excellent job on our transfer stations for making sure that, not only was our water supply ever in any danger, but getting the word out to people to try to not use as much water, because then that water, not that they couldn't use the water, but then that water doesn't go into the sewage end of stuff and overtax that. And that's where the concern was more.
Yeah.
But everybody did a great job in the cleanup, and even from the public works perspective of overflow garbage cleanup following that, it was...
What about the fishing piers? So will they need to be replaced?
They will, and we're thinking of doing something a little bit different.
Something like we pulled in, maybe?
Or something, we're even thinking maybe cantilever, something like that, opposed to posts that went out. But really what happened with those, and this is why insurance would have covered it if there would have been more damage to them, the ice lifted and lifted them up.
Yeah.
So insurance will cover that, but they won't cover flood. So it was kind of interesting that, and really the only damage was the post that supported it.
Okay.
So so we're discussing some options with regards to those on how best to install them.
Do you know? And this is a little bit outside, but across the river for Bellevue, I noticed that they don't have their kayak. Did that get damaged, or did they just pull it in and they haven't put it out yet because the river's
good question.
It got damaged?
The post got damaged.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay.
No, I thought you were going to talk about the boardwalk sections over by the right place there.
floating earlier.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that.
Why don't they pull those out?
Those used to sit, I don't know if those are office buildings or I don't know what they are, just to the west side there, yeah. That slough. But they used to be sitting over there up on the shore.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The first flood lifted them up, moved them around. Nobody's ever come and picked them up.
Right. So now they're a little closer. They should go get them.
Right. Right. But I'm sorry.
Are those privately owned there?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's for their own little boardwalk
area. I don't know what.
Yeah, they came across the river now, and they're over up at the right place.
Yep, exactly.
Hey, that kayak launch hasn't slowed down the kayakers, though. I was out on a walk Saturday. I must have saw a dozen kayakers.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know where I've been, where I've seen a couple people launch from, interestingly enough. So the trail under Alloway Avenue Bridge, uh-huh. Since it's all underwater,
yep.
It's almost like a ramp then going into the water.
Right,
yeah, they've been
it.
Walking at the end of the trail and just launching.
I think that's where these folks got in.
Where do they park?
So, over by the right place.
Okay.
Or no, I saw people parking in that kind of makeshift parking lot area. You have an Alloway property just
across from
the
Yes, they parked there, and I saw them carrying their kayaks across the bridge.
Prudential.
Insurance.
Yeah. What's his name? Borley. Across from his property.
Yeah. So I guess we got to make sure the kayak launch. Okay. Well, that's it for information then, right?
That is it for information. Okay. Yep.
All right. Then item 8, future agenda items. Does anybody have anything they wish to have on a future agenda?
Other than pickleball courts.
And will that be an action item, do you think? Or
yes, I believe next, or at a future meeting, we'll have that as an action item.
Okay. All right.
I got here late. So did they approach the village about asking for pickleball courts, or is this something that the village is pursuing and ask them for their feedback on pickleball
courts? Kind of a both thing. I've spoken with several of those members in the past, and you know, they had inquired with regards to, you know, future options. They spoke with a few board members, you know, about it, and it was something that was on our radar, I think, you know, as far as, you know, a future item, but I think in a timely manner, it's, you know, kind of, you know, especially since we're looking at a facility, a tennis court that is in need of repair, you know, is that an option to go that route, you know, as opposed to some other options? So, but yeah, so it was kind of a combination.
Okay.
And then I think, you know, once the word got out that we were going to talk about it, then they.
Yeah,
you know, talk to their members and stuff
too,
like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm glad that they showed up and their input.
Okay. Entertain a motion for adjournment.
I'll make a motion for adjournment.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned at 7:24.